You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, but before we get started, I wanted to tell you about an exciting opportunity for you and the leaders you know this fall, the Pipeline Conference. Our team, the Lifeway Leadership Team, is hosting Pipeline on October 13 in Nashville. And it's a conference unlike others you've probably been to because it's a training conference, an event that will show you and your church leadership team how to launch a leadership pipeline. You'll hear from speakers such as Tom Rayner, Eric Geiger, Kerry Newhoff, and Paul Tripp. We'll have plenary sessions interspersed with shorter, practical TED-style talks. We'll have Q&As with the speakers to clarify and apply what was said, and we'll also offer a second day built around coaching and implementation that will have limited seating. And we really want you to join us. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more and to register. Pricing is affordable, and we're offering an early bird discount through the end of July, so you want to move quickly. Again, go to myleadershippipeline.com for more information and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper. Here, not as usual, with Todd Adkins, because Todd...
What? In spirit.
That's
in
right. Spirit. Todd is on vacation. Good for him. Setting a good example for the rest of us. So I'm here with Daniel M., another regular co-host who's filling in with Todd's sound effects and whatnot.
Yes, hello.
but really, neither of us can fill Todd's shoes, so we're just going to go ahead and soldier on. Today, we are talking about a subject that really can only be talked about when your boss is... not around.
Which is great because Todd's not on the episode.
That's right. So we're going to take full advantage of this. And we are talking about undermining your boss.
Yeah. So do we just share examples of how we do that with Todd? Or
I think we could just riff for 20 minutes and just actually do it.
Okay, sure.
And
let's
then
do that.
People be like, here, this is a master class in undermining your boss.
Preaching by example.
That's right. He would expect nothing less from us. But no, it is a little bit awkward to talk about undermining your boss with your boss sitting here because you might have at least I might have a stroke of conscience. Daniel may not struggle with some things as much.
Yeah, I agree with you too.
So I figured we just go straight into the questions and just start. What I expect to come out of this would be probably some funny stories.
Yep.
Probably a little bit of guilt. And then probably also just sort of hopefully a realization of some things that we go, huh, I didn't really thought of that before. Maybe I need to be a little bit more conscientious of that. That happens to me periodically when talking about.
So we're going for conviction then.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sort of a.
And who's going to do the Todd one-liners?
Yeah, kind of entering the side door of conviction. So yeah. We're not, you know, not attacking, but sort of that, hey, did you think about this?
Yeah, that's good.
All right. So our first question is, what are ways that people undermine their bosses publicly? So for in meetings, for example.
So are we talking about intentional undermining? Like they're wanting to do that or
yeah,
just,
I think this is like an expression of disdain, bad attitude, those kinds of things. Cause we have a question later. That's sort of the ways that people might do it without thinking about it, but
yeah.
we'll save
okay.
that. So okay. Yeah, this is going to be ways that people undermine a boss in front of coworkers, really just as a reflection of their attitude towards their boss.
Yeah. And I think you got it. You nailed it right there in regards to attitude. I mean, when I think of my older children and how they're in school now and all the bad habits they're learning.
So many,
you know, with language or speaking back or even just facial expressions like rolling your eyes or not looking. I mean, all these things are,
I didn't realize how personally I took stuff until my kids started rolling their eyes at me.
Yes.
Just like the big, like, ugh.
I know. Right.
And boy, a sound effect can make you feel so
yeah.
dumb.
So funny story. This is when I was an intern. It was a church plant, very first church. I was an intern at, and it was actually a couple months before I started my internship. And I was sitting in the front row and I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was like 20. I was pretty tired, trying to finish up my last semester in college. And while the pastor was preaching, I yawned, but I didn't just yawn. I went like,
yeah.
without even noticing,
like a big stretch too.
Yeah. And then my wife, who you know was my fiance at the time, she like elbowed me in the gut, and she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What do you mean? Did I just do that out loud?" Oh, so afterwards, I went up to him and I apologized profusely, and
yeah.
he said he didn't realize what had happened.
Right.
But I feel like that's one way that sometimes, whether it be not paying attention mm-hmm. fully, yawning, rolling your eyes. Those are ways that we undermine our bosses and without saying it.
Right. And some of those can be accidental. But I know for a fact I have sat in a meeting with, you know, people who I just don't have a lot of respect for. And again, that's an attitude problem on my part. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing if you have work style disagreements. It's it's one thing if you get frustrated with how people do things. It's another thing to treat them as if they're a lower form of humanity than you. It is simple things like they start talking and you just sort of actively tune out.
Yes.
So you
and it's and sometimes open, you can identify like you can see someone tune out.
Yeah. You flip open the laptop and you immediately like I'm going straight to Twitter.
Yeah.
Like I'm just or pull out the cell phone. Yeah. I mean it's those things where you're like that person is talking. I am not paying attention.
Yeah.
I think there's obvious ones like criticism and being argumentative. Mm-hmm. Most people don't go there because they know they're poking the bear if they do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you stand up and say, you know, you call your boss an idiot or you act like they're an idiot.
But it's the subtle ways that individuals do that, right? So whether it could be playing the devil's advocate, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, I don't like how it's called the devil's advocate, right. But in a sense, when individuals say, "Hey, I'm just trying to help the team out. I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate." And honestly, you could do that one time or another, but if every time you talk, every time your boss talks and you are always the devil's advocate,
you're aiming it at, always at his opinion or her opinion.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And not to other people's, but it's always to him. Then there definitely is that undermining going on.
So it feels like there's sort of two sides to that coin. Is one is if you're always being the devil's advocate towards a particular person.
Yeah.
The other is if you are always the devil's advocate and nobody else ever gets to play that role.
Yeah.
Because in a healthy team, somebody's always going to have a counterpoint where you say, well, have we considered this?
And how they respond to that afterwards, right?
But in an unhealthy context, it's you use that as a sort of it's really a passive aggressive way of criticizing and saying you didn't think of this.
Yeah.
Here's
a
better way to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is and again, so I think that's why undermining is this isn't about criticizing your mm-hmm. boss. That's pretty obvious. That's a matter of being insulting.
Yeah.
This is a way of making other people in the room think less of the boss or be inclined to laugh at them, tune out, whatever it is, not follow, not take them seriously. So, I mean, the public ones are pretty obvious, I think. So let's move on to our second question. And that's what are ways that people undermine their boss behind the boss's back? So not in a meeting, not, the big yawn, the tune out, but just... I think these are really insidious because this is the way you can actually affect the way an entire team of people views the person in leadership.
And this is how it often happens, especially if you have team members, mm-hmm. right? So you have, let's say the brand new team member come on board that was just hired and you take them aside, right? Not with the boss there and you tell them, hey, okay, this is how the team really works.
Right.
And then there are ways that you come up with you have the perspective of, hey, I'm trying to be helpful. I'm trying to get you oriented. We're mm-hmm. trying to develop a friendship. But if you have that spirit of wanting to undermine your boss and you don't have that respect for your boss, that's going to come so much through that backdoor conversation. That backdoor orientation.
And I think this is where criticism comes into play. Very few people are bold enough or stupid enough to do that publicly, mm-hmm. but it's very easy to do it. So we're sitting in a small studio right now. Todd is not here. This would be a real easy time for me to be like, you know what really frustrated me when we were in that meeting last week and Todd kept going on and on and on about this thing. And like, I criticize a decision that he made or how he did something. And I'm not trying to find a solution. Yeah. All I'm doing is affecting your opinion of him or putting you in the spot where you're stuck between two people who you'd like to respect both of us, but you're not really left with that option.
Yeah. So how would you do that then? I know this is a little bit off of our question, but how would you then do that share that with a coworker without undermining them, but you're wanting to, I don't know, vent, but you want to do it in a respectful way?
Well, I think it's there's a bit of a balance, counterbalance, because if you are a person who is regularly supportive of the team, of the boss's leadership, then the occasional frustration is just an occasional frustration.
Yeah, okay.
But it has to be counterbalanced. You say 10 positive things or you invest fully 10 times as much as you get frustrated, as you criticize. if you start to get to that where it's like 5-1 or 2-1 positive to negative, the negatives are getting way too much airtime. And so I think, you know, so Todd would be a good example. We talk about Todd when he's not here. We talk to Todd, and the other thing is those are very similar things.
Yes.
If I got frustrated at Todd for something, I would not be reluctant to tell Todd what I was frustrated about.
Mm-hmm.
And if he walked into the room while I was telling you, I wouldn't clam up and feel really,
indicator too, then, you know, it's that integrity piece as well.
I mean, that's a determiner of gossip as well. A lot of times people will veil it and go, I would say this to their face. Well, you very likely wouldn't. But if it's a particular instance, a particular decision, that's a different kind of thing. And in a healthy context, you can do that. I think other ways that people undermine their bosses is just a lack of effort, you know? So we work in a corporate structure. Occasionally, decisions come down from the top. They get passed on to Todd. Todd then passes them on to us and says, hey, this is a point of emphasis for this month, this quarter, whatever it is. I may not like it. I may not. That's not the thing that I'm real keen on. And if I just put in half effort, I'm just going to do the bare minimum here. I'm undermining Todd. I'm undermining him before his superiors and before the team. And because he's responsible for me.
Yeah.
He has to defend me to people above him. And if they say, what did you, you know, if Eric Geiger asked Todd, how did your team do this thing? And Todd's like, well, not so great. I have undermined him because that Eric sees that reflects on him directly.
Yeah, that's good. And even overstepping your lines and overstepping your boundaries or even going over their heads is another way that you can do it behind your back. So saying, hey, let's say you didn't like the decision that was made from your boss. You go above them to their boss.
Right.
And most people aren't going to be as blatant as, you know, just going to their boss's boss and straight out saying what they think. But perhaps it's dropping questions or hinting at different things. Yeah, those are ways that we can undermine
it. It comes up in conversation. Yeah. So you see the boss's boss and they're like, hey, how's everything going with this project? And you're kind of shrugging and be like, well, you know, could be better. That's
a huge undermining.
That reflects on your boss. And really, all of this, it keeps coming back to attitude and integrity. And, I suppose we could have just stopped there in the first minute and been like, have a good attitude, be a person of integrity.
The end.
All right. So let's kind of wrap up the how people do this with our third question. And that is, how do people undermine their bosses without even realizing it? So some of the things we've talked about have been very intentional and overt. Some of them have been more accidental. And then there's sort of this gray area. So these are going to be things where... I think for listeners, we respect our listeners a lot. So I'm going to assume that most of them who are undermining their boss fall into this category.
Yeah.
They're doing something and they're not even realizing what effect it has.
Well, there's that UCLA study by Dr. Mehrabian, I think. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Right.
But basically he says he found in a study that 93% of communication is nonverbal.
Right.
Right. And I feel like a lot of this undermining without realizing it hits on the nonverbal type of communication. So there's this, I love this acronym. It's called SOLAR, right? Gerard Egan developed it. It's this idea of how do you communicate well nonverbally.
Right.
S stands for sit up straight.
Mm-hmm.
O, open your body posture. L, lean forward slightly in your chair.
Open your body posture would be like, don't cross your arms.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, or because crossing your arms often connotes that you're closed or skeptical of the other person.
It's skeptical. And I cross my arms all the time. I wouldn't have attached the two. But yes, but this again, these are things that we're not aware of.
Yeah,
so.
And then the first one, sorry, sit up straight is the idea of facing the person squarely rather than slouching back or sitting to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then L is leaning forward slightly in your chair, not all the time, you know, because that's
a little weird.
It is weird. E is eye contact. So that's looking at their eyes. And R is the idea of relaxing. So being relaxed in your manner and being cognizant of your facial expressions. Yeah. So the whole idea with this solar is the idea that because we are not often aware of these points, you know, without meaning to do it, we are connoting this undermining posture.
And we always we always know our motives, which means that we can have no intention whatsoever of being closed or skeptical, for example. But if we appear that way to somebody, they now assume that we are being that way. And that's why these, like, the dot to dot explanation of how to do it is really necessary. I don't like being given lists of instructions, but I need stuff like that because I'll just forget.
Yeah.
And I'll slouch back and I'll cross my arms and I'm still fully mentally there, mm-hmm. but I don't look like it, which means the person talking is they're frustrated with me. They feel like they're not getting their point across, whatever it is. And I mean, when I heard those things, what I picture is a classroom of students all sitting there watching a video, you know, some boring history documentary or something like that. And they're all kind of slouched, arms crossed, heads down. Lights go on. The teacher gets up there and he goes, "All right, so here's what we need to know for the quiz tomorrow." And everybody sits up straight.
Yeah, that's good. They lean forward. That's a good illustration.
And so it's that posture where you're locking in and going, okay, this is important because it's physically telling the other person what you're saying is important to me. And I'm going to tune into this.
Yeah. And depending on your level of trust with the other person and relationship, some of these things can be, for example, the whole idea of leaning forward slightly in chair. If you've known and worked with the person for 5, 10, 15 years and you have that trust, you don't necessarily have to do all of these things, but it's the idea of, hey, you may not even know your boss that much.
Yeah.
And to do these things, I mean, they may be interpreting it as disrespect or you're not listening.
Yeah. This is trying to make a positive impression. Mm-hmm. Once you know somebody really well, impression is you have a lengthy history with them,
Yeah. And I mean, it's like your cell phone, right? Yeah. So there are some people who are advocates for taking notes with paper because it shows that they're fully there. And obviously there are other reasons they would do this. And others, they want to take notes on their phone or on their computer. So one of the easy ways that you can do this, if you're in a one-on-one meeting or a team meeting, especially in a one-on-one meeting and someone's saying something to you and you're actually taking notes, just
tell them,
hey, you're on your phone. Hey, I'm not texting. I'm just taking notes.
Right.
And by doing that once or twice and to even connote that body language that you're taking notes helps them to know that you're paying attention and not undermining them.
Yeah. You do away with the risk of the body language thing. I think for a person like me and a team like ours, of which I think there's lots of other people who would fall into this camp. One of the ways that we unintentionally undermine is our sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, we make a lot of jokes. We make a lot of jokes at our teammates' expense and vice versa. And I'd say 95, 98% of the time, that's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, it doesn't bother anybody. But being able to turn that off when Todd is leading a meeting, to be able to turn that off and say, okay, boss man is telling us a thing that we need to pay attention to, time to stop being a smart aleck, that if we don't do that, we can unintentionally undermine, or if we call attention to somebody's quirks or flaws too often or in front of the wrong people.
Yeah.
You know, you take some of those jokes that work in a team context and you take them into we go work with a church somewhere and I make the same jokes about Todd there that I do.
And they don't have that history.
Right.
They don't know either.
I just sound like a jerk.
Yeah.
And he looks like an idiot.
Yeah. That's
true. It's the awareness of sort of the appropriate time and place for humor and busting people's chops and things like that, which I'd say that's one that I have to very conscientiously think about because I'm always ready to make a joke at somebody else's expense.
And I like the idea of that environment and that timing for that, right? So you can go, hey, pre-meeting, when you're walking in the hallway, when you're going out for lunch, be yourself, crack those jokes, do that. But when it's meeting time, when you're trying to get something done, you're right.
Yeah.
If there are too many of those jokes, it definitely can feel, it can slow the meeting down and definitely connote undermining.
Yeah. And just, if at the very least, sort of I'm not really interested in what we're trying to do here. I'm much more interested in just killing this time until I can go do something else.
Yeah.
All right. let's hit our next question. So we've rattled off a whole bunch of ways that people undermine and things to think about there. But the question is, what are the effects of all of these actions on three different people or three different groups? On the boss, on the team or organization, and then on the one doing the undermining. So what are the side effects of all this over time?
Yeah. My experience is that there are a lot more people who can dish it out than take it.
Yes.
And those who are really good at dishing it out tend to not be the ones that are really good at taking it. So I remember being in team meetings where the boss would dish things out, and it wasn't here at Lifeway, but where he would dish things out, and then we would dish things back, and all of a sudden the temperature of the room changed.
Yeah.
Right. And his perspective or his attitude or body language changed as well,
right,
as being, whoa, you just disrespected me.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, you were doing the same thing to me.
Yeah. And as a boss, if you do that where you dish it out, but you won't let them take it, you're just bullying.
Yeah.
Because you're functioning from a position of power at somebody else's expense, and there's no equal footing there.
Yeah.
And you can call it a joke, but it's not a joke unless it's a give and take.
Yeah. So, I mean, the deeper feeling and attitude is this idea of insecurity.
Yeah.
Right. And if you undermine your boss, whether it be publicly behind their back or if you're doing it without even realizing it, if depending on how thick that leader's skin is,
right,
I mean, you can definitely cause them to grow in their insecurity, and that may actually relate to the way that they do your job evaluation,
right,
or even the way that maybe they talk about you to their boss.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did an episode a little while back, just a few weeks ago, on leaders and insecurity. So it's Todd and Eric Geiger and myself. And one of the things we talked about was how everybody in leadership is insecure.
Yeah.
And they express it in a myriad, you know, a myriad of ways. Some are way over the top bold, and some are, you know, sort of shy and afraid to make decisions, and kind of everywhere in between. But if you undermine your boss, you are poking the nerve of insecurity.
Yeah.
You now, maybe you're not, because maybe their insecurity rests somewhere else and you're joking about something that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
But you run that risk, which means that you're probably going to drive them further into whatever their weakness is. So you're going to make them less able to make a decision.
Yeah.
You're going to make them more heavy-handed. You're going to, you know, whatever it is, they're going to be inclined to gravitate that way. And then I think the effect for the team is just it's not a team.
Mm-hmm.
Undermining starts to, it pulls apart the threads of a team where, you know, the boss is not close to the team members aren't close to the boss.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them side with the boss, some of them side with each other. That attitude just starts to pull apart the whole fabric of the team or organization. And that's, I mean, relationally, that's a problem, which leads to effectiveness issues and just getting things done. I mean, I've worked at a couple different places where there was just overt disdain for the guy in charge, or fear.
Yeah.
Which those, you know, in one case, people were too fearful to do much. And the other, I mean, it was just, he walked in and it was just like a collective eye roll. Cause like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
And they were not good organizations. You can't be that way and get your work done well. You can't do a good job.
This reminds me of Patrick Lencioni's Triangle in the Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Which is a fantastic book.
Yeah. And he talks, I mean, that base level is the absence of trust.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like when you undermine your boss, you are telling them, you may be joking,
yeah,
but in every joke, there is a sliver of truth.
Right.
Right. So, because that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
Right. So if you are undermining them publicly behind their back or without even realizing it, it is connoting that atmosphere of trust, which may lead to conflict,
right,
which may lead to a lack of commitment, not wanting to be accountable. Mm-hmm. And then at the top of his triangle is an inattention to results.
Yeah. And I think that trust aspect is why, when we were talking about environment a little while ago, knowing when and where to make those jokes at somebody else's expense can build trust, because that can build camaraderie. Camaraderie builds trust.
Mm-hmm.
You take those in the wrong context or at the wrong time, and you lead other people to not trust your boss. So if Todd is trying to lead a group of pastors and I make a joke at his expense in front of them, they now don't trust him.
Yeah.
I still trust him.
That's
but
true.
I hurt him in front of them and in their eyes.
Yeah. And if you want to get to that point of relaxing the audience or trying to build trust and lower the seriousness of the room, then make fun of yourself.
Right.
Right. Don't make fun of someone else.
Self-deprecation. Yeah. Self-deprecation is, and I would say for the boss, that is a great way to keep people from undermining you.
Yeah.
Because self-deprecation shows self-awareness. And and so the things that frustrate them, you can say, I'm frustrated at myself about these same things. You know, my inattention to detail, my inability to respond to an email, my whatever, you know, I'm chasing off subject things in a meeting. Those things that really frustrate certain people, make fun of yourself for them.
Yeah. And by doing that, you're not actually communicating weakness. You're actually communicating self-awareness.
Yes.
And it causes us to trust you more.
Exactly.
Because it's like, okay, he actually knows that he does that.
Yep.
Rather than the whole, you know, The Office, and you get Michael Scott, who is the most unaware boss, and people just make fun of him behind his back.
Yeah. Right? So one more group that we haven't really touched on. We talked about the boss and the team, but if a person is regularly undermining their leader, their superior, what is the net effect on that person?
If they finally realize that they've been doing this,
or if they don't. So what path does it lead them down? I mean, obviously worst case scenario, they get themselves fired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one result that could happen, but just in terms of their own ability to work, in terms of their own attitude, where is it taking them if they are a regular underminer?
Yeah. There's always a thought behind a thought,
yeah.
Right? There's always a reason behind a reason. And I feel like I love this quote, and I'm going to butcher it, right? But Sun Tzu Wu from The Art of War, mm-hmm. he said something to the effect of, if you know your enemy, you're going to win half the time.
Right.
But if you know yourself, you're going to win the other half. Right. And I feel like we spend so much time wanting to learn how to be a good leader, how to be like that person or this person without really discovering how we are wired and our blind spots, right? So when we look at the whole idea of, hey, I have finally realized that I'm undermining, or maybe I should stop doing this, I think the question you should be asking is, why am I doing that?
Yeah.
And is it because of an insecurity in my life that I'm just projecting that onto them?
Yes.
Right? Because I find that a lot of times that's what it is.
Yeah. And if something really frustrates you,
mm-hmm.
That's usually a matter of expectation. You know, it's a matter of,
that's a good word.
I need, you're kind of, you need that thing, you know, you need that style of work. You need this environment in your workplace to fill up a void in your life of some kind. That's not necessarily an unhealthy thing because expectations are necessary. But if you find yourself being unduly frustrated at your boss for something, that probably reflects some issue in your own heart, your own attitude that needs to be worked on. And I would just say, if anything that we've said, you're like, ooh, I do those things.
Yeah.
I'm an arm crosser. I sigh every time somebody makes the same joke. Like these little things. I'm a gossiper. The effect on those long term on you is just going to be, it's going to rot you out.
Yes.
You know, because you walk into a room expecting to not like what you're about to hear. You walk into a room with you're not inclined to be part of the team. You're not inclined to support the boss. You're not inclined to work hard. And it's a self-propagating thing, I think.
Yeah. And going back to the whole idea of expectations, perhaps it's also, you need to go to your boss and try to clarify what you're expected of and what you expect from him or her, right? And clarify the expectations in role and in working relationships with one another and with the team. And if you feel like it's after having that conversation, if you still feel like there is, you're at odds and you're still positioned in a place where you're going to continue to undermine, then maybe it's time to look for another place to work.
Yeah.
So that you're not polluting that place, and also so that you're not preventing yourself from ever getting referred.
and you just mentioned about three things that we've actually done episodes on previously. We've done being a self-aware leader. Yep. We've talked about working for a boss you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else? We talked about leaving well. That was one that we just recorded not too long ago and released. We've touched on aspects of this. So if this is something that's an itch that you need to scratch, you want to dig into a little bit more, go back and listen to those.
Yeah,
let's hit our fifth question. You already started to bridge the gap into this one. So it's just a natural end point for us. And that's, if someone realizes they have been doing these things to undermine their boss, what can they do to resolve and remedy these issues? So you talked about being proactive, going to the boss and getting expectations straight. So if it's an expectations-based thing, go clarify as much as you can about what's expected of you, what you expect of your boss in terms of really anything, wherever those expectation friction points are.
Yeah. And that's where having good systems in place to have, whether it be weekly reporting or monthly reporting or quarterly, or even if it's annual or biannual reviews, having opportunities like that to even measure, hey, was I like this last year? or what was I like this in a previous work situation? Was I like this with a previous boss? And even just doing some self-awareness homework to figure out, okay, when did this attitude begin in my heart? Is it because of a issue at home, or is it because of a change in coworkers?
That's a really good point, because you bring your stress to work, which means that if I am really frustrated with my kids or my marriage or financial situation or whatever, and I come to work, I'm much more likely to be frustrated with everybody I work with at no fault of their own.
Exactly. And it's not, because it goes both ways, right? Both you're bringing your stress from work to home and you're bringing your home stress to work.
Yeah.
Right. And there's really no way, no matter how good you may think you are at compartmentalization, it may actually be subconsciously affecting you.
Yeah. Just sort of spills over. I think you mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast another way, and that is an apology.
Yeah.
You talked about the yawn. And just going and apologizing afterwards, which I would say if it's a one-time thing, is will diffuse the situation almost immediately, unless the person just has, they have a bone to pick with you. But in almost every instance, they might laugh about it. Yeah. At the very least, if they were offended, they're going to say, I really appreciate you noticing and coming.
Exactly.
Like that. It takes care of the situation.
Yeah, that really is the worst table. That they'd probably do.
Yeah. I think a couple other things that come to mind. One is, and you brought this up as well, sort of recognizing the triggers. You know, when you do a self-examination, recognizing when my boss begins to do X, I always feel like this. Mm-hmm. I always respond this way. Okay, well, now you know a trigger, which means you need to either figure out if there's a way to avoid that situation, or just figure out, okay, it's coming. He's going to start doing that thing that drives me nuts. How am I going to respond differently this time?
Yeah.
So it's just a conscientious, like, it's basically fighting temptation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember there was a previous episode on this about micromanagement. Uh-huh. And I feel like there are some people who are going to be like, I hate it when my boss micromanages me. Right. And that previous episode went into great lengths. Eric did a great job at discussing that. But basically the synopsis is, hey, if you're brand new, if you don't have a lot of trust and track record with your boss, then micromanaging isn't actually, like, micromanaging is what they should be doing because you're setting expectations. So if you feel like you are if you want to undermine your boss because they micromanage you, perhaps what needs to happen is excellent work.
Yeah.
Checking back in and that trust being built.
That's 'cause they building trust. Exactly. Yeah. You gave another good example earlier of a way that people can respond when you gave that acronym. Was it SOLAR?
SOLAR. Yeah.
That is just, again, very practical, proactive steps where instead of kind of wondering, oh, what do? You go in and you say, well, I can do those, whatever it was, five things.
Yeah, five things.
And I'm just going to conscientiously be this way. And then I think the last thing is just stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Stop.
It's the 5-second rule.
Yeah. Stop gossiping. Stop being critical. Stop and think for 5 seconds before a joke comes out of your mouth. And you think, is this the right room for this? Mm-hmm. Are these the right listeners for this? Is this a thing that's going to make people laugh at his expense or laugh kind of along with?
Yeah.
All of those just real basic principles of being thoughtful.
Yeah. And being intentional in that way. I mean, if you are intentionally thinking and intentionally taking those steps towards SOLAR and intentionally stopping, taking the 5-second rule, thinking about it, just do that for a couple weeks and it's going to develop into a habit.
Yeah. And a lot of those triggers will go away because you've created a whole new sort of paradigm and context for your own thinking and response. Well, I think that wraps this one up. I hope that was helpful. I have some things to think about and some things to implement and probably some things to stop doing. Daniel's nodding, which means he either agrees that I need to stop or that he agrees that he needs to stop. I'm not sure which.
The former.
of course.
And the latter.
But listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. We always appreciate this. Thanks for sharing this with friends. We see great interaction on Twitter and some on Facebook as well. Feel free to tell your friends about it. And then another great way to support us is to jump on iTunes and leave a rating and review there. We prefer nice ones, but we're not that picky. If you want to undermine us on iTunes, you can do that. Jump on iTunes, leave us that rating and review. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you go, don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming Pipeline Conference. It will be on October 13th in Nashville, Tennessee, and early bird pricing runs through July, so move quickly to register.
Again, that website is myleadershippipeline.com. We look forward to seeing you there.